This is Fresh Air. It's been 2 seasons since Nora Dunn left Saturday Night Live. As you may remember, she left after refusing to appear on the same show with comic Andrew Dice Clay. But she's kept alive some of the characters she created for Saturday Night Live, like model-turned-talk show host Pat Stevens, lounge singer Liz Sweeney of the Sweeney Sisters, and sex kitten Babette. She wrote new material for them in her book Nobody's Rib. That's also the name of her one-woman show. She told me that Pat Stevens was based on a woman who used to come talk to her class in school.
She was patterned after a woman named Connie, who used to come to my high school and talk to us about an exciting career in makeup and modeling. And she was very disconnected to anything else, any other reality. And I went to a inner-city high school in Chicago and went through the tumultuous, you know, end of the 60s there, and we had a lot of racial problems and a lot of intensity. And in the midst of it all, the nuns would have Connie. And she'd talk like this. And she would just, you know, get up and say, you know, ask us questions and show us how to stand. Of course, she always said, you know, you stand with your, and sit with the knees in the locked position. So that's how she stemmed out of her. I used to call my friends on the phone as Connie, and they always bought it, you know, and they would somehow get, you know, finagled into coming down to the School of Beauty Culture and taking a tour.
Just come down Saturday. Let's just show you what we've got here to offer.
So she came out of that.
So how would you shop for Pat Stevens?
Well, I wouldn't shop for him. I mean, she does definitely does her own shopping. Loves to shop. In fact, when she writes these, there's some beat poems in the book, and Pat became a beat poet. She was in Chicago, and she was wanted to go to a zoo. And she mistakenly went to the Art Institute because there were two big lions on the outside. When she walked in here, she wasn't in an art museum, and there was lots of course, big pictures, which she liked. And she runs into a poet there who talks her into going to a poetry slam, and she thinks she's going dancing. And she goes and hears poems, and then she begins writing her own poems and calls her psychiatrist later, and he tells her, well, you know, you need to go shopping. So she goes and she buys the whole Shiseido line and gets herself back, never writes another poem again.
Do you want to do one of the poems for us?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. Let me see. This one is called, I read it as Pat. Imelda, we hardly knew ya. I remember how deeply she grieves from inside her puffy sleeves. Her eyes are puffy, too. Well, wouldn't you cry? I mean, why did they have to keep her shoes? That was wrong. They belonged to her. No wonder she sings the blues. At least she looks best in that color.
That's good. That's very good.
The one I like a lot is, here's my favorite. This one is called,
Jackie is 60, I can't believe it. Jackie Onassis. Jackie, oh. Jackie Kennedy, Jackie Rose, up, Jackie. You rose up. You made your fortune. You found Maurice, or he, you, or you, he, whatever will be. Jackie Jack, Jackie Shack, Jackie come back. Caroline, John, baby Rose, blow her nose. There she goes. She's walking now, Jackie. Oh, Jackie, you live in the now somehow. Art, culture, a beaded evening bag. Never an old bag or an old hag. Jackie will never let us down. I wish she could wear a crown on Martha's Vineyard or a pillbox hat. But what's not is not. I've said goodbye to Camelot. I won't cry. Don't die, Jackie. Oh, Jackie, don't die, please.
That's wonderful. That's a Pat Stevens performance poet.
Yeah. It struck me as very funny when I started writing. I could have written these things forever, these little Pat beat poems. That was fun.
You used to write poetry yourself, didn't you?
I did.
Real poems? Yeah.
Yeah, I did. In fact, you know, I write short stories. I wanted to put some in the book, but they weren't really quite appropriate. They're not as humorous as this. This is a book of humorous collections, but someday I really would love to get some of my stories published and some of the poetry published.
My guest is comedian Nora Dunn. She is a former cast member of Saturday Night Live. She's currently touring the country with her one-woman show called Nobody's Rib. It's also the title of her new book. We'll talk more after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Actress and writer Nora Dunn is my guest. You left Saturday Night Live, and that coincided with your refusal to be on the same show as Andrew Dice Clay.
Mm-hmm.
So were you fired or did you quit?
No, I wasn't fired. You know, I came back the next week and did the show. My contract was up that year, which they did not renew my contract. I did not ask them to renew my contract. So it was a mutual separation. I was on the show for a long time, and it was ready. You know, I was ready not to be on the show, and I didn't want to leave on a controversial kind of a note. It just happened that way. But I really wasn't going to come back for a sixth year on the show.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to take the stand that you did when they booked Andrew Dice Clay to be the guest host?
Well, it was a surprise to me. I didn't know he was the guest host until Monday, and my husband knew and didn't tell me all weekend because he knew that I would be very upset. And I felt really hurt by it. That was my first reaction, is why would they have him on the show? I know he's got a movie coming out and so forth, but it's not because he's controversial, and it's not because he says bad words on the stage. It's definitely the content of the material and the hatefulness of it and the anti-humanistic quality of that kind of comedy. I think it's such a fascist tone to it, and it just goes against every shred of feeling of integrity that I have about my own work. And I had struggled on the show somewhat. A lot of sketches I didn't want to do, and the writers knew that there was a lot of stuff that I thought was in bad taste. They went ahead and did it. That was the nature of the show. There was everybody writing all nature of material. So and sometimes I think I was possibly too cautious in what I wanted to be identified with when it comes to humor and comedy. But this was something that I knew I wouldn't be able to write a satirical sketch that was hard-hitting enough to say what I had to say, and certainly there's no guarantee that it would have been on the air. And I really couldn't face the idea of going out for good nights and standing up there with a big smile on my face and waving to the audience when I would have felt that what we did was a betrayal to the quality and the integrity of all the seasons of Saturday Night Live. You know, everything that show stood for me from the very beginning.
Had you seen Andrew Dice Clay's work?
I had seen parts of his HBO special, and I went out and got a CD that day, Monday, because I thought, well, I better really listen to his latest piece and see, maybe this is sort of grounded in some kind of an anger, or maybe it's just black comedy, and maybe I'm not getting it. So I bought his latest, and it was just hate humor.
I'm glad you said that you actually went out and listened to it to decide what you really thought of it, as opposed to just operating by what you thought he was probably doing, as opposed to what he was really doing.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, we have expectations that are wrong. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
So, yeah. And sometimes you misinterpret what someone's doing.
Yeah, right. Right.
And I also felt that there was all of that time for him to explain it in any kind of a satirical context. Mm-hmm. It's clear that he doesn't. It's clear that it doesn't come from any source of intelligence, and it's very exploitive. It exploits people's fears, and comedies ought to release that.
So did you get any support from the other performers on the show?
I don't think they were indifferent about it. They didn't quite know what to do. And I also was under a different contract. Then the cast came a year later than me. They had another year, and I think they felt that they had to play it safer than I felt I did. Which is not to say if I had another year, it would have been any different, because I tend to fly off the handle on these kinds of things. I'm not calm about it. But I think for them, they felt a little frightened, and no one that I work with on the cast is that kind of a person. None of them were really very confrontational. Very creative, very, very funny group. But I wouldn't think it would be characteristic for them to have done that kind of thing.
You said that there had been a lot of sketches that you really didn't want to participate in because mm-hmm. you thought they were in bad taste. What kinds of sketches?
Well, some of them I just was uncomfortable with their real insensitivity to women. I really got tired of whores. And I didn't want to play them. And it's not because I'm just tired of it. It's a tedious characterization. And there was just too much of it. And there was seemed to be only two characters that these guys could write. And one was the kind of a promiscuous, hoary type of girl. And the other was a housewife who may as well have had a lobotomy. Almost every housewife I played, or mother, you know, had about two lines and kind of sat with her head bobbing. And when Jan and I did stuff together, it was always very, the characters had integrity. The Sweeney sisters really, they believed in themselves. We weren't making them losers or making fun of them as losers. They were real successful in their eyes. Same thing with Pat Stevens. You know, I had to struggle a lot not to have the legs pulled out from underneath her as to actually what she is about. And it was, you know, you kind of had to beat them off your work so much to just get them to say, no, this, it's not girl humor, it's just humor. And so often we heard, well, I don't get girl humor. All right, we're going to do a woman sketch this week. So it was always kind of boxed off in the corner here. You kind of feel like women and children over here and men over here. And I just got tired of it. And there were quite a few pieces like that were just, I just felt they were old. I just felt they just weren't now. They might have been appropriate 15 years ago, but they're just not appropriate now.
What's the difference between the whorish kinds of roles you didn't want to play in sketches and the Babette the Sex Kitten role you came up with for yourself?
Well, Babette is, she's a sex kitten because a sex kitten never dies, we just get fluffy. The intent of Babette is that her idea of a strong woman is very distorted. She's proud of her film. She did a portrait of woman. You know, woman came from the French made woman because we took the tiny word men, which is an American word, and we put the French word woo in front of it. So that is how we get woman. But I am a strong, fluffy sex kitten. I did film always for strong woman role, and that's why I made, I was a firefighter in female firefighter Centerfold USA. I was in all this film. I made a portrait series for television, and this was to cover women in all walk of life. I made portrait of an escort, portrait of a showgirl, portrait of a naked slut on drugs. Portrait of a female cop on crack. I also played a woman who was so angry, she's pursuing a serial killer rapist, and she kills him while he is being electrocuted in the electric chair. You know, so she's all these roles she's played that are her. She thinks that is strong. Even in Gunload, I was in Gunload, and they play a aerobic instructor who is so strong that she's working out of the Stairmaster. And the criminal comes into the room, blows off of her head with an AK-47, but she still continues to work out without her head. And finishes her workout 45 minutes, and then she dies, only after the workout. So that's her point. It's not, there's something else there.
I really love what you're getting at with the character, which is someone who manages to turn all these kind of sexist stereotypes of women into strength. Mm-hmm. Look how strong I am.
Yeah.
Before you got into comedy, you were a writer, you were a painter, you went to art school, and then it was after that that you went to San Francisco and took some acting lessons, mm-hmm. and then started performing at comedy clubs. What led you to try comedy?
Well, I studied acting for a couple of years, and I had these characters that I did on my own, and a friend of mine that I met in acting class was a comedian, and he said, you know, you should just do some of these characters on stage or do them for a monologue. And so I started doing my characters on the stage, and it just sort of, it was one of those things that once I started doing it, even though I was absolutely terrified, it was terrifying, when it worked, the feeling was great. So I just kept writing them.
What was the worst humiliation that you faced on stage?
Oh, God, there's so many. But I remember one night these people came up from Los Angeles, and there was always somebody coming up to see, and I got to be part of 10 comics, but I went on last. By the time I went on, the whole audience had left, and it was just these judges, you know. And I put a, I had, at the time I used to wear things, I had a wig on, and I was in this whole character, and I got up and did it, and I did not know how to get off the stage, and I just eventually just kind of stopped, and I wanted to get down and just slither off like a snake, but I didn't even have the courage to do that. I just sort of wandered off the stage, and it was Kevin Meaney who was there and was so nice to me, because most comics would just, you know, run as you came if you failed, and he came up and said, "That must have been just terrible for you."
Oh, that's really encouraging.
And I said, "Thank you." Oh no, it made me feel great because it was terrible, and I wanted so much just for someone to go, "God, you know, let's go have a drink."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "That wasn't your fault." Another time, I was in Chicago with Christine Zander, who's a writer on Saturday Night Live, and we performed together. And we did a show at this theater, and my mom and dad were in town, and they came to the show, and there was only two other people in the audience.
Oh, God.
And we did the show, and it was a total failure. And I remember my father coming up after the show, and he said, "You know, I don't think it was you. I really think it was the audience." But those things you wear like badges. All the failures are what you learn by, and then the triumphs are just feel good.
Mm. Nora Dunn, her book is called Nobody's Rib. This is Fresh Air.